You're listening to Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Ari Snyder, joined by Maine Public's chief political correspondent Steve Missler and State House correspondent Kevin Miller. So the Maine legislature appears to be heading toward a June adjournment with a lot of work still to do on some high-profile bills. But the House recently charged into the politics of the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol by Trump supporters when it took up a bill designed to create a day of remembrance. This proposal came up at the same time that President Donald Trump and his supporters are still trying to rewrite the history of the attacks. So, Steve, how did this debate play out in the Maine House of Representatives?
Well, Ari, I think it's safe to say that many of the unfounded or disproven claims and narratives that have been circulating among MAGA influencers over the past 4 years have taken root and flourished with some Republicans here. Some claim that Trump supporters who stormed the Capitol were somehow entrapped by leftists, the FBI, even the Capitol Police itself. Now, these kind of claims have been swirling around for years, but it's been pretty rare to see them stated on the floor of the Maine House. In fact, in 2022, at the nearly one-year anniversary of the January 6th attacks, the House debated a resolution commemorating those attacks. When that happened, the debate ran a total of 3 minutes. And the Republicans who spoke basically just objected to some of the descriptions of the rioters. They didn't dispute the facts of the attacks. But this time, several of them did, during a debate that raged for 35 minutes, and it would have gone a lot longer had Republican Minority Leader Billy Bob Fockingham not called for a truce because the debate became so intense.
And Kevin, you covered that debate for us. Can you tell us a little bit about what was said?
Yeah, Ari. So as Steve mentioned, we heard some pretty stark rhetoric from a few Republican lawmakers. One of them was Representative Barbara Bagshaw of Windham, and she talked about how she was there that day in Washington, D.C., attending Trump's Stop the Steal rally. And she was the one who suggested that a police officer in riot gear was actually inciting the crowd by telling them, come on in, this is our house. And then, as you can hear here, she suggested that somebody else, and she doesn't say who, but not the pro-Trump crowd, that someone else was actually behind the violence.
People were texting me, oh my gosh, are you okay? Are you okay? I'm thinking, people are having barbecues, people are singing. It was peaceful. And then there were weapons put out on the steps. There were pitchforks. People were trying to cause violence. These were not the Trump supporters that were there.
Now, I would just say that if you watch the countless videos from that day, it's pretty clear from the apparel and from what people were saying that many of the people were battling with police and then roaming around the Capitol were indeed Trump supporters. And these comments got a pretty strong response from some Democrats. One of them was Representative Mark Mallon of Biddeford.
I believe it's important to remember what happened that day because we all saw it with our own eyes. Members of Congress who supported Donald Trump condemned it that day, because they saw it with their own eyes, and many of them fear for their lives as well. There were chants of "Hang Mike Pence," the Vice President of the United States. This happened, and it was an assault on our democracy.
And Steve, you mentioned earlier that some of these claims have been circulating for years, but they weren't necessarily shared or at least stated by elected Republicans. What's changed?
Well, the facts haven't changed, Ari. I mean, there's tens of thousands of hours of footage of the January 6th attacks, and a lot of it was used in the prosecution and convictions of more than 1,200 people. 15 Maine residents were charged, and I would encourage people to read those court filings because the basic facts of the attacks are not disputed in those filings, and they would be if those were something that attorneys for these defendants wanted to bring forth as a way of defending them. But look, the president pardoned nearly every one of these people shortly after taking office in January. He's called them patriots and political prisoners, and he's even talked about creating a taxpayer-funded compensation fund for the people who were made to pay restitution as part of their criminal sentences. And some of the people convicted are now profiting off their notoriety, selling January 6th merch, flags, coffee mugs, etc. So in that context, I guess it's not that surprising that some Republicans would feel emboldened to talk about the riots a lot differently than they did just a couple of years ago.
Okay, so moving on to electoral politics, the 2026 elections are beginning to take shape with a potentially intriguing Democratic primary for the second congressional district seat that's currently held by Representative Jared Golden. Kevin, is Golden going to get a primary challenger next year?
Yeah, well, we've heard rumblings of potential primary challengers against Golden in the past, and they never materialized. But this week, former Secretary of State Matt Dunlap said he's considering primarying Golden. This would be a pretty interesting primary because Dunlap is well known among the hardcore Democratic activists who typically vote in primaries. Right now, he's the state auditor, but he was Secretary of State during the rollout of ranked choice voting and for most of the LePage years. He was also very vocal nationally when President Trump was questioning the integrity of the nation's election systems in the lead up to 2020. He also served for a spell as the head of the Sportsman's Alliance of Maine, which is the state's big hunting, fishing, and gun rights group. He's from Old Town, which is a blue-collar mill town, and he's got some of the same moderate Democratic credentials that Golden has, so it could be an interesting matchup.
Steve, Golden was sort of hailed as Democrats' solution for the 2nd District, which tilts more conservative and voted for President Trump in 2016, 2020, and 2024. What's different now?
Well, that's a good question, Ari, and I think the answer is somewhat nuanced because Golden has not really moved away significantly from some of his core positions, you know, defending abortion rights, protecting Medicaid and Medicare, but he has sharpened his critiques of the Democratic Party and his critiques of those critical of him. And I think that has really rubbed some activists and Democratic politicians the wrong way. Dunlap actually alluded to this when we spoke about Golden's vote for the SAVE Act. That proposal ostensibly is designed to prohibit non-citizen voting, but it could make it difficult for women who have changed their last name to register to vote because of its identification requirements. Golden has tried to defend that vote, saying the concerns are just fear-mongering, but the backlash has been swift and bruising. It's a lot like the response to his column last summer, predicting that Trump would win and that everything would be just fine. All of this has opened the door to a potential primary challenge. And Ari, the prospect of that is made more interesting by the fact that whoever wins the Democratic primary might have to face former Governor Paul LePage in the general election. And Golden was quick to point that out, saying Dunlap has zero chance of beating LePage. Now, that particular message will probably ring true with some Democratic voters who just don't like LePage. He's a motivator for a lot of Democratic voters to turn out just because of the way he governed during his two terms here. I think Golden is keenly aware of that. So invoking his name, you know, in his response to a potential primary challenge is pretty interesting.
And finally, it looks like another referendum approved by voters is heading to court, potentially all the way to the Supreme Court. Kevin, this proposal approved last year is designed to limit super PAC contributions. Can you talk us through it?
Right. So this definitely wasn't the highest profile issue during the November election. But question one set a $5,000 cap on how much Maine residents can contribute to super PACs. So super PACs, they play an increasingly influential role in elections today because these are the groups that are they're not part of any candidate's campaign. In fact, they're actually prohibited under law from coordinating with candidates. But they take out ads and pay for flyers telling voters why they should or shouldn't vote for candidates. And there's no limit, literally no limitations at all, for how much money they can spend or raise. And these groups spent more than $2.6 billion during the last election cycle nationwide. Kind of going back to question one in Maine, super PACs could still raise and spend as much money as they want, but they can only raise $5,000 at a time from individuals. And that didn't sit well with a few of the groups here in Maine and nationally that rely on larger donations. They sued to block the law under the argument that the Supreme Court and lower courts have clearly held that money is a form of political speech and you can't limit free speech. But, you know, here's the interesting thing. This lawsuit wasn't just fully expected. This is exactly what the groups behind Question One actually wanted to happen. They say the Supreme Court has never decided this particular issue with super PACs, and they say the unlimited donations just invites this illegal quid pro quo between candidates and donors, where, in other words, I spend $1 million to help defeat your opponent, you vote my way on this issue that's really important to me. That court process begins next week when a federal judge here in Maine holds the first oral arguments in the case.
And that was Maine Public's chief political correspondent Steve Missler and State House correspondent Kevin Miller. Thanks for joining us for Maine's Political Pulse. You can also read the Political Pulse newsletter. Find it online at mainepublic.org/pulse. Our music is by Rob Holt. I'm Ari Snyder. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again soon on Maine's Political Pulse.